All right, so my name is Eric Stoyer. I'm sitting in the right place, yes. I am the creative director of Creative Commons, and I'm a contributing editor at Wired. Right now, we're going to talk about some things like artist promotion, fan interaction, monetizing content, those sorts of things. We'll open it up for lots of question time at the end. And we're going to start off by just starting here to my left, introducing ourselves and what we do. I've already done that, so we'll go ahead over.
Daniel Graf from Kite TV. You probably have seen it on the flat screens all around. We're a communication platform. And as of 2 weeks ago, all four major record labels have artists using Kite. They're running around with these N95s through live video streaming, recorded video streaming. It's a really nice experience for the fan community to interact with them. And I'm sure we'll talk more about it a little later.
I'm Robert Scoble. I'm managing director of FastCompany.tv and used to be a tech blogger, and used to work at Microsoft, and worked at a variety of startups, and now I'm taking the FastCompany world onto videos, so online with daily videos.
Hey, I'm Tony Pham. I do our community and artist relations for Slide. We produce widgets on social networks and some of the top applications on Facebook. So part of my job staying in touch with our user base is getting excited about things like, is Lauren going to get back together with Jason on the next season of the Hills? And then also I work with our indie musicians to come up with campaigns to expose them to our user base of over 150 million unique visitors monthly.
I'm Carlton Evans. I'm the director and founder of the Disposable Film Festival. It's a festival of short films made with cell phones, webcams, disposable digital video cameras, point-and-shoot cameras, kinds of things people have on them, consumer level, electronics. We are really looking to push the creative potential of the kinds of films that everybody is making and posting on YouTube these days.
Start off by saying that Tony has the perfect convergence of my interests at his job there. So congratulations to you for being able to work on that kind of thing. I want to ask what people think about this question of content value. Do you have an idea of whether people are generally overvaluing or undervaluing monetarily this sort of content? I mean, are people thinking that these opportunities that we're going to be talking about are going to make them richer than they are?
It has for me.
But for people who are not, you have
I'm hiring.
So it's a communist sort of business where everyone makes the same amount of money?
No.
Okay. No.
I mean, the media business, if you get more visits and you have more influence, and you can show that through your audience size and your audience interactions and your audience measurement techniques, then you'll make more money, right? Advertisers pay more for a Super Bowl ad than they do for, a Wired,
sure.
A Wired show or something. Right?
Sure. Yeah, but that's exactly, I think, maybe I phrased it incorrectly, but that's what I mean. Are people imagining that they're all sort of being back at that? Not because it's the reality, but because it's not.
We'd all like to win the lottery. I think the people I hang out with are pretty realistic of what you can do right now. It's a hard world. It's especially hard now that the economy's in a little bit of turmoil. It's hard to talk people into sponsoring content. I don't think that'll change. It's hard for movie producers to get their movies built. It's hard for rock bands to get noticed. I mean, look at how many rock bands are here in the next week. How many of them are going to turn into YouTube, I think. Well, hopefully more, but the reality is, some of them will get to be star status, some of them will make a living at it, and some of them will be struggling artists. But
it's a key question. It's all about branded content, and if I start doing my channel, I have my channel, maybe I get 5 viewers, maybe I get 10 viewers. 50 Cent, when he does a show, he gets within a day 200,000 viewers. It's all about the branded content. And what you've seen, I think there's a huge opportunity now, I will take the music industry as the best example, because they have huge troubles now. Record sales go down, They're all complaining, oh, they're stealing our stuff and all that. On the other hand, if people are listening to more music than ever before, just not paying for it right now, there's other way to monetize it. And the music industry now has to embrace the opportunity, get it on all the iPhones and all these phones, get it on Facebook, on MySpace, and really embrace it. We did our first campaign ever. We started end of November with 50 Cent, and now we've all four record labels using it. He has all the time, I have his channel open here on his This Is 50. Look, right now, there's 1,600 people watching. His latest show he put up, if I click here, was 15 hours ago. He has 80,000 views already. 3 days ago, he put up his world premiere of his new video. It's 500,000 views. Is this interesting for advertisers? Can you monetize this? Absolutely. It's distributed on 15,000 websites right now. His channel, he can reach his audience at any given time. And now I tell the record industry, hey, you can be in control of all that screen real estate.
But the reason I'm an optimist about this industry is somebody can come out of the woodwork, not have a name like 50 Cent, mm-hmm. start a video channel on Kite or Quick, or start a blog, put out content that people want to read, and rise up very quickly without having to talk to a committee. I mean, if we wanted to get media distribution done in the 80s or 90s, we would have had to talk to a committee at CNN or CBC or CBS, I'm sorry, or the New York Times or the local newspaper. Those are very difficult things to get passed if you don't have a name like 50 Cent already, right? Now with blogs, you can get discovered very quickly. You can get on Twitter and participate in the community. You can get on Seismic and participate in the community. Mm-hmm. You're seeing new stars already on Seismic. I'm seeing stars being built in just the last 3 months since that service started up.
I mean, I think it's been really exciting for me to be able to work with, artists who are contacting us, and they're like, you know, we just love to be a featured artist on your site. It would make a huge difference, like, in terms of the fans that we can reach. One example, you know, is we worked with Network Records, their great partner, and they had an artist called Matt Wirtz. And, you know, when we first launched music, we had a wide variety of selections, including Snow Patrol, Paris Hilton, all these different people, but he ended up being our number one artist, and that's, you know, nobody had really heard of him, like some people did in his in Canada where he's from, but you know, he was able to just bubble up, and subsequently he's been signed to a major label, so it's just been really awesome to be able to contribute to that and help him out.
Which type of online advertising do you think works best in some kind of this year? Prove itself to be the
good content. None of the people who become stars in the blogging world have done advertising. Like, you know, Mike Arrington of TechCrunch, he never did advertising. Perez Hilton, I don't remember seeing an ad from him. The Huffington Post, I don't remember seeing an ad from them. I never spent advertising. We just create content all night long that people want to read, and we aim at a certain audience, and we understand how the internet gets to our sites. That's one thing that's very important for people who might be coming from other media types. How do you get audience? Where do they come from? What is a link on Digweb? I know that because when Digweb links to me, they send me 20 to 60,000 people. So if you need an audience that size, you need to figure out how to get Digweb linked. And there's a whole set of ways to get diggers to interact with you and promote your content to that audience. I know that when I'm on the front page of the BBC, they'll send 3,000 to 8,000 people. So there's another set of people that you need to worry about there. Google is an audience driver of its own, and you need to know how to make your pages SEO compliant so that Google gets you higher. I have, if you do a search on Recession 2008, I have the number one hit on Google, and I'm getting 200 people every day who are searching for information on recession and whether it's real or not, or tips. So if you're adept at figuring out where the audience is coming from and where the audiences you want to reach are, you know, that's why Chris Perillo is on YouTube rather than other places. He knows the audience he wants to reach is on YouTube. And yes, he does use Ustream to stream his videos, but he's pushing those videos over to YouTube to get that audience to come back and interact with his brand. Yeah.
I
we had a very interesting example, an artist called Prodigy. I'm not sure if you know him. He's a hip-hop artist, and I think right now he's in prison. He had to go last week to prison for some weapon charges or whatever it was. And he documented his life before he has to go to prison. And he was kind of forgotten already. And within 3 weeks, he got 1 million viewers. Wire picked it up. Rolling Stone magazine picked it up. And he had a total outreach, you know. His channel was all over the place. And he's like, wow, I can't believe this. And what was it all about? It was all about authentic content. It's all about content. And up here, I'm not sure. I mean, you guys are very creative. I'm not that creative. My content is not going to go anywhere. If we all think we can be the next star on the internet, I think we're wrong about that. But you really, at the end of the day, it's all about content. How good the quality is. And that guy, and he knows how to deal with the media. He had his cell phone with him. He was on live on BET. He was just filming while he was on BET. He was on XM radio. And then the media picked that up. And now he got 1 million viewers in 3 weeks, I think. And again, it comes down to content. With nothing else.
Content and conversations. When I quit Microsoft, I told 15 people at a conference that was far smaller than this one. And I didn't tell any A-list bloggers. I didn't tell any famous journalists. I just told one of the people that I had not met. And I asked them not to talk about the story until Tuesday, because I really hadn't even told my boss that I was finally quitting. And of course, somebody leaked the story by 7. This was on a Saturday, by the way, on a Saturday. And by 7 p.m. on Saturday, it leaked, and by 11 p.m. it was on 200 or 300 blogs. By the next morning, I was in 150 newspapers. Wagner Edstrom tracked how many media mentions I got out of those 15 conversations. They said I had 50 million media impressions off those 15 conversations. So that's the new world. This new world is a Twitter world where the word of mouth network is hyper efficient. And word of mouth has always been important, right? I helped run a camera store in the 1980s, and we knew 80% of our sales came from word of mouth, came from people meeting each other in lunchrooms, and, oh, you're a photographer, you just want a new, cool new camera, where should I go? And, you know, that's how business got done. Now that is a worldwide conversation that happens in minutes, and interesting content and interesting ideas spreads like fire like that. You'll see it go from Twitter. In fact, you can watch stories like even the interview Susan Sarah Lacey did here of Mark Zuckerberg. It went from Twitter to blogs to Dig to Tech News to the world to CNET, all within about 6 hours. And that's how you get this audience.
Carl, can you talk a bit about your project and also just about some of the changes you've seen in the relationship between people making things and distributing it and consuming it and so on?
Yeah. One of the things we noticed is that there had been this drastic change in the last couple of years in terms of filmmaking, where what we were seeing is, and I mean, I'm sure this is not original, but the audiences were really starting to become the producers, that people who were watching films were actually making the films that they wanted to see and sharing them with their communities. What we set out to do with the Disposable Film Festival is we started to notice a kind of almost like a typology of filmmaking based on these new devices, and that, for example, a webcam really suggested a very sort of intimate, confessional kind of mode of filmmaking. The cell phone suggested a more voyeuristic approach because it's something you can carry with you. People tend to pull out their cell phones and shoot whatever interests them at the moment. And what we set out to do was really to challenge people. I mean, I'm almost reluctant to call them filmmakers because there's such a wide range from very casual, amateur people that are submitting stuff to us to, you know, really experiment, you know, professional experimental filmmakers and professional narrative filmmakers who are sending stuff in. But to set this challenge to really see where these media would take them in terms of their product. And we're based in San Francisco. We're expecting this to be a very local, small festival. We ended up getting entries from all over the world, in 5 different countries, 4 of which were represented in our last program. Just an amazing level of work. I mean, it just seemed that people are really understanding this way of making film in a way that you know, casual filmmakers never did before.
That'd be great.
paid them. So
okay. Yes, Tony, you're dealing in the position of being sort of an intermediary between your community, company, and I wanted to hear you talk about how the concern and complaints with the community and company have
Yeah, I mean, I think when we first debuted music, our users were like, let us just upload our own tracks. And while that would have been awesome for them, I think it was important for us to respect the rights of artists. So as we've tried to evolve the product so that it kind of creates a happy medium for everybody, it's been really interesting for us to be able to just see the potential of how it's the distribution of our network, because Kobe Kaye, who was like the first major breakout artist on MySpace, the reason she became so was she got 10 million playback, something like that, over a period of 4 months. Now, using our Funwall application, which is on Facebook, over 20% of users have it installed, so it pretty much reaches everybody, whether they have it or they view it. We promoted certain artists, and they've gotten the same amount of playbacks in a matter of 2 weeks. So it's just been, you know, it's from the artist side, as we've been able to prove that we really can be an effective promotion vehicle, companies have been more and more open to trying to work with us, and we're very receptive to making sure that we do things in a way that makes sense for the labels as well by directing traffic and showing numbers to whatever site it may be, whether it's a MySpace profile or an iTunes page or whatever.
Do you have anything to add about the relationship between the company and the relationship?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm adding to what we just heard from what we realized is when it's about brands, it's hard if you're a destination. And if you heard about Kite when we were in beta last year, Robert was an active user. We were kind of a destination. We launched last week at kite.com, which is a full B2B site, and I'm telling you, it makes a whole difference. We just won Disney as an investor. Disney invested in Kite. Would they have invested if Kite is a destination? Absolutely not. So they were looking, they're the brand, they're the destination, so they want that. We are the technology in the background, which we are very happy to be now. And we added, I mean, Nokia's with us, Disney, Telefonica, Docomo. There's several of these very big brands now, which is enabling technology because they have no clue how to get this out there. There's such a big opportunity. What Slide is doing, what Rockyo is doing, what Quick is doing, what all these other companies doing, what we're doing, there's a huge opportunity. Look at the amount of content which is out there on magazines, on TV. All that can be monetized on your phones. It can be monetized on MySpace, Facebook. They just haven't figured it out. I just had an executive, I'm not going to tell you which label, one of the four record labels. I just had an executive up at our booth before, and he showed me a secret project. So he put up a website, which is in beta right now, and he had, it's a destination, and he had videos of his artists, which he shoot on mobile and all that. I'm like, so can I take this to my Facebook page, or can I watch it on the phone, or can I take it to MySpace? He's like, oh, it's a destination. I'm like, you know, no one is going to go to a late site. But there's so much education needed on that level. I'm like, he's like, look, this doesn't matter what band it was a big band. Like, look, they're sleeping on the plane, and this is our most popular video we have right now. I'm like, wouldn't you want that people could take it on Facebook or MySpace? And if you don't enable that and you don't control it, people just steal it.
In fact, so, at the startup, I was working at PodTech. When we went from a destination kind of style site to a player where a blogger could embed the player on their blog and not link back, you know, just play the video right there, our traffic tripled overnight. Yep. In less than a week, our traffic tripled because bloggers don't like to link off, right? They don't like their readers to have to go off somewhere and then come back. And do that,
yep.
Right? But they love it if there's videos or multimedia in the page itself, so people are reading the story and then they play a video and then they keep reading the story. That way they're reading the brand and experiences right there on the page.
At the end of the day, what do they want? They want eyeballs for as long as possible on their content so you can run advertising on it. I think, I'm not sure if Slide, you guys, I think, have a deal with CBS as well, where they run their content through you guys with massive distribution, right? And who's going to CBS.com? Well, not that many people.
I actually work mostly with the users, and I like it that way because I'm just looking out for their interests. That's more the voyeur in the suit kind of question. So sorry, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, okay. I mean, on our end, we have to find a way to make some money. So we said, let's focus more on branded content because there's so much out there and people want to see that. Unless UGC, yeah, you can still do UGC on our end, but that's not our prime focus. With Nokia, some confidential numbers, let's keep them in here. But by the end of this year, Nokia will have 100 million video phones in the market. They have 1 billion phones in the market now, but 100 million video phones. By 2010, there will be 1 billion video phones of Nokia in the market. They're going to be the biggest broadcasters. Do you want, as a content owner, your content out there? Absolutely. Absolutely. I think. What do you think about the films, the short films?
Well, it's, I mean, I can't really answer on behalf of the filmmakers that we represent, but I mean, I was on a panel earlier today that was really, it was about piracy, and I was one of the filmmakers. The other was very firm about how he was very pleased when people pirated his films because it really got it out there, and he actually seeded the torrent of his film so that it would get out there. The question of like monetizing it, I think, is in some ways, I actually think it's kind of secondary because finish that. But you know, one of the amazing things about this environment is you don't need a gigantic audience in order to support yourself. What you need is a dedicated niche audience. There's a statistic that if you have 1,000 true fans. People who spend $100 in a year, which doesn't seem like a big amount on your products, that means, and you're self-distributing, that means $100,000 for the artist minus, you know, some marginal distributing costs. So it's you know, it's a fine living.
In some ways.
even in the Bay Area. I think it's
fast company paying better.
Yeah, if fast company paying better, we'll have to have a shout out to this family. So, I mean, but that's an environment in which, you know, an artist would otherwise starve, hook up with the big studio.
If you look at the magazine world, right, I used to help run a computer magazine that had 100,000 subscribers and we had $10 million in revenue a year. So you didn't need a super huge audience to make a lot of revenue that supported 30 people working.
In the meantime, we're gonna take questions with that microphone on the your left.
Yeah, if you could come up to the microphone because we're recording this for.
People have questions.
I'm sure someone does. They're all twittering like mad about us.
Oh, some brave soul. Aching for your voice.
He's such a man.
Can you?
Y'all still want a question?
Yeah, let's move on to question.
Okay.
I'll ask one. I'll do this. Those who don't know me, I'm Andrew Feinberg for Capital Valley Media. I write on public policy and technology issues. And I think it was Robert who brought up that when PodTech allowed... Sorry, let me start this again. I think it was Robert who brought up that when PodTech allowed other people to embed their content into their pages, that the number of people looking at that content skyrocketed. On my blog, which is CapitalValley.net, my writing partner who's out in San Francisco just posted about Hulu being launched. Hulu is a joint venture between a number of old media companies, TV networks, content producers, to put their shows online, presumably advertiser-supported content. And the question that is being asked is Hulu competing with YouTube? And are they trying to take control and take back that video market and in some ways put lightning back in the bottle? My question to the panel, and especially to the rep from Creative Commons, is how much do you see the whole goal of the content industry changing to one like Robert described, where the whole idea is to get your content viewed, not necessarily in the exact way you want, but as he said, the best advertising is good content. And the copyright model isn't self-lending that Creative Commons does. Does the panel see any problems with existing copyright laws butting up against what is a changing environment and more content for more people?
Yeah, let me take that, because that, my Flickr photos, we've had an interesting discussion in the community about photos and whether they can be used or not, right? Because if you mark your photos with attribution license, right, other people, if they use that photo on a blog, are supposed to put, you know, photo credit by Scott Beal or whatnot, and oftentimes they don't. But I've gone the other way. Instead of trying to fight that fight, I put my photos into total public domain. You can use my photos without attributing it, without paying me, without doing anything for me. What happened?
More instantly, people looking at photos, right?
Instantly, overnight, my photos started appearing on Wikipedia with the attribution credit. And I found that fascinating, right? So by sharing openly and letting the community do whatever they want with this content, they actually attribute, most people will attribute and will give you some credit, or will even send you some money as a gift. You know, hey, you bought a $5,000 camera and you're putting photos out there that I want to share and put on my blog. Yeah, it's very fascinating that the more it's of the community and how they're shifting. But there certainly is that fight, that friction between, I want to be paid $300 for my photo and you guys are stealing it, and you're seeing, you know, some sites putting watermarks on photos and some photographers putting watermarks and really hoarding their content, but they don't get as popular as the people who let it free. You know? And you might not make your money with your photography, but if somebody wants to hire a wedding photographer, they're going to look at Flickr and say, who's the best photographer out there, right? Oh, Thomas Hopkins, beautiful pictures of people and scenery. He's really talented. I can tell that because he puts 300 photos up a day, right? And he gives them away. Oh, I'm going to hire him to do my wedding, right? And all of a sudden, he's getting business that isn't about the photo itself, but it's about the expertise, the brand that he built around his content. And that's changing business. And there's two different mindsets. There's some people like Wayne Hartwell who really want to be paid for every photo and have attribution and really control where that photo gets used, and there's other people like me who are like
that. I think that was actually the reason that I framed the first question. I didn't mean to frame it poorly, but the question I was asking at the beginning, we talk to so many people who see the value. There's obviously possible monetary value in putting into the commons, but there's just this value of contributing to that, that system so people can use things. But there are a lot of people who come in contact with and think they've sort of, you know, they've been drinking Kool-Aid and they read all the media and they think that, you know, that there's going to be some point where all their photos are worth $300 a piece. And it's just, that's just not, you know, that's not something that I want to encourage with them all the time. I want to point to those cases when that does happen, and there are lots of compelling cases of it and they're awesome and they're obviously more happening all the time, but it's just, that's not always going to be the case. Obviously, it's something to do with copyright. It has something to do with the platforms you're publishing into. It has everything to do with the quality and desire to be able to use it. I think your question also was about, unless I misunderstood, something about are the conversations that we're having with companies, artists, creators, etc. Are they beginning to maybe take the approach that well, you know, maybe it actually just is good to have stuff out there, and we don't need to control the way that's delivered 100% because it's just not realistic. So is it, are there ways for us to take advantage of the opportunities that are just, you know, around putting things out there more of a So is that a fair way to sort of?
I think so. And
yeah.
one more quick thing.
Sure.
Maybe if Mr. Graf can jump in on this also. In the panel I was just in on music piracy, there was a representative from, I believe, Media Defender, and I asked him about the Howard Berman bill moving through Congress right now that would create an intellectual property crimes section of the Justice Department. And would this panel, or this not panel, this section be used really as an arm of the government to prop up business models and industries that might not be sustainable in today's environment? And afterwards, I had an attorney speak to me.
I think we're just in the middle of friction between two opposing viewpoints. REM today announced, I interviewed the CEO of iLike. REM today announced that their next band will be released, that their next album will be released in public for free on March 24th on iLike, right? And you can listen to the whole music, the whole band, the whole album. You know, that's the new model. The new model is share your content and make businesses other ways than you used to make them.
And they still have to make business, so the music will be for free, but they have to make a business, absolutely. They have to make a living. It will be by merch, it will be by ticket sales, and for REM it's easy to say because they fill still a lot of arenas.
Well,
and it will be, of course, advertising as well in the future, so...
Radiohead gave away all their content and said, you price it the way you want it. If you don't want to pay us any money, steal it, or just download it. And if you want to, if you think it's worth $3, send us $3. If you think it's worth $20, send us $20.
But I think we all saw the numbers were not that impressive afterwards.
$10 million for a band is not that impressive.
I think it wasn't that much. Afterwards, it was quite doubtful. Did they really make that much? And it's radio. It's one of the biggest bands. So I think we all have to get used to it. Music will be for free to get access to it. People won't pay for music anymore. Are they going to listen to it? Absolutely. More than ever, there have to be other ways. And these other ways is, you know, the record label are trying to do these 360 deals. And of course, the established bands don't need to do this. The other ones, some of them are going to do it. So they get the whole marketing machine behind them for merch, touring, for all this other stuff.
As a blogger, I also learned over the years that the more I help other bloggers out by either giving them content, giving them leads, giving them story ideas, the more goodness comes back to me. You know, oftentimes I'll learn about something and I'll give it to TechCrunch before writing it up myself because that helps a relationship and it helps him out with his business and his audience, and then he'll remember me and look to me when he has a chance or give me something that I would find.
I know of one band, they have a widget, they offer some of their videos there, they offer, you can download ringtones and some merch. That band makes revenue, they're not selling tracks, they make $100,000 a month through that widget alone. It's embedded in hundreds of thousands of websites. I think that's the future where it's going to go.
Which band?
I can't remember, because I just said how much they make.
Okay. Thank you very much.